open a public hearing on HB 5047. Can I have Jim Shepke come forward and Linda Ames, and the LFO analyst Monica Brown will give a brief introduction.
Mr. Chair and members of the subcommittee, this before you this morning is the budget for the Oregon State Library. They were here several weeks ago to do their Phase 1 presentation, so now they're back for Phase 2 and the possible work session on their budget. Several pieces of material are before you this morning. You have some additional information that's beneath the agenda that's on your place setting this morning that is responses to questions that you had from Phase 1. As you may recall, there are essentially three services as well as an administrative division for this agency. You have the Talking Book in Braille program. You have library development services to local government, and you have support to government research and electronic services to state agencies, as well as an administration division. I think this morning what we're going to have is Mr. Shepke from the agency respond to any additional questions that you have, and then hear from Linda Ames on the governor's recommended budget. And I believe there's also some public testimony to be taken this morning.
Any additional questions for Mr. Ames? Or I'm sorry, not for Mr. Ames, for Mr. Shepke. It's early in the morning. If not, Mr. Shepke, I'd like to give you this opportunity to make any comments that you'd want to make at this time, or you know the budget recommendations. So,
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Jim Shepke, director of the Oregon State Library. I also have with me here today Mr. Bill Sullivan, our State Library Board of Trustees chair, and he's here to answer any questions you might have for him. We did prepare a Phase 2 presentation today, but in the interest of time, I would just say that we do support the governor's recommended budget. We are aware of some recommendations of Ms. Brown, and what I would like the opportunity to do, if I could, during the work session, would be to have some comments on Ms. Brown's recommendations.
Okay. We can do that.
Thank you.
Ms. Ames, your presentation.
Chair Devlin, members of the subcommittee, I'm Linda Ames with the Budget Management Division, and I'm going to go through the little high-level budget summary that looks like this. Page 2 shows the complete administration program area where the State Library is grouped for budget purposes. You see both in terms of all funds and general fund, the State Library is a very small piece, but they do have a couple of general fund programs. Page 3 for Governor's Principal's budget, their programs were related to some to education and some to government accountability. And page 4, you see the budget in terms of the different fund types. Over on the left, 21% of the budget's general fund. That is primarily for the Talking Books in Braille program and the Ready to Read grant that goes out to local libraries. Other funds is the biggest piece of their budget at 47%. The largest piece of that is assessments from state agencies and then those services to state agencies. But there, in other funds, there are several other revenues. There is the limitation included to spend some money from their donation fund. There are also, as a result of Senate Bill 12 that passed last session, there are the agency is using part of their federal funding to license databases centrally. Local libraries pay for part of that, so the money flowing in from local libraries is also showing up in this budget, and that's now a fairly significant piece of their other funds. And then there's a Gates Foundation grant, which we'll see a little bit later. So the other funds have increased fairly significantly since last biennium. And then federal funds is 32% of their budget. That is funding coming through the Library Services and Technology Act. Page 5 shows the four different divisions, and Ms. Brown already went over that. But let me just point out, in library development is where the Ready to Read program budget is contained, as well as the federal grants, since that is money to support local libraries. Page 6, the budget is as shown by budget categories. Personal services at 39% of the budget. Services and supplies 33%. Capital a small piece. Then special payments at 28% of the budget. This is money that flows directly out to local libraries, and that is both the ready to read and the federal part of the federal funding. Okay, page 7, the historical budget perspective. You do see a 13% increase in general fund. Most of this is the result of, if you remember, last session we pulled all the general fund out of administration for this agency on a one-time basis in order to deal with the budget crisis. That has been restored in the governor's budget. That's $238,000 of that increase. Again, you see a pretty significant increase in other funds, and that's a result of those various pieces I talked about on the revenue side. And federal funds going up pretty significantly as well, although keep in mind we don't have the federal budget for the second year, so that's still an estimate. And the last page, just a listing of some of the policy issues that are in this budget as you go through it. Replacing the general fund in administration. The Gates Foundation grant is $185,000. And this is actually the third in a series of foundation grants that have come from the Gates Foundation, but this is the first time it's been structured so that the money actually comes through the agency's budget. There is a policy package in Talking Books and Braille to do a small reorganization. It gets rid of one.
Chair. Yes. Mrs. Ames, what do you mean this is the first time the money's explained the Gates Foundation grant?
You want to explain what that means?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Wisnett. The previous grants from the Gates Foundation have gone directly to local libraries, and in this case, we're going to handle the money.
Thanks. Mr. Chair, follow up.
Yes.
Will you take an admin charge out to handle that money?
Mr. Chair, Representative Wisnes, we will not.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
On the staff reorganization, we'll get that policy package gets rid of one position that has been vacant for a long time, and then it upgrades a second position, and it does use some of the endowment fund interest for the first time to fund part of that program. And then the ready-to-read program does continue at 84 cents per child per year, which is the same level it's at in the current biennium. That is down from the $1 per year before we started into the downturn in the economy and the various special sessions of cuts. And finally, on the revenue side, the part of this agency is funded by assessments to other state agencies. They'll total $5.3 million for the biennium in the governor's budget, and that's down just slightly from the prior biennium. And that concludes the presentation. If there's any questions.
Any questions for Ms. Ames? Thank you. I'd now like to move to the parties that have signed up to testify. Nan Heim, Heather McNeil, and I believe it's Mary Ganane.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Nan Heim, representing the Oregon Library Association in support of House Bill 5047. Our association has over 900 members, and two of them are with me this morning, Mary Ganane from the Eugene Public Library and Heather McNeil from the Deschutes County Public Library. And they'll be speaking to you in just a minute about ready-to-read grants to public libraries. I wanted to mention first that our association strongly supports the state library. We We believe they've done an outstanding job of identifying their missions and their constituencies and serving them well. So we support this continuation of their services in the next biennium. We are here to address specifically ready-to-read grants, which has been mentioned, are funded in this bill at about $1.2 million, continuing the current level of 84 cents per child. This program, which is relatively small, peaked at a dollar per child in 2001 before it was cut in one of the 2002 special sessions. And I do want to mention that restoring it to a dollar per child would be a mere $230,000 for the biennium, approximately. As I said, it's a wonderful program, and libraries throughout the state do very exciting things with these relatively small grants to encourage children to read and to teach love of reading. And Mary and Heather are here to tell you what they do with these grants at their libraries. Mary.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Mary Ganane, Youth Services Manager at Eugene Public Library, and I am here today to speak in support of House Bill 5047, the State Library's budget, and specifically about the ready-to-read grant portion in that budget. Eugene Public Library received $18,489 for its 2004-2005 year grant, and what we do with that money is run a program called Read for Joy, El Gozo de Leer, and the funds provide for two part-time parent outreach specialists, one who speaks Spanish, and they work with volunteers to make visits to homes of either first-time parents or parents of new babies in the area. We, the parent outreach specialists, as a supplement, also do visits to groups such as birth to three, mother baby groups, and make a presentation about literacy development. And in both in the groups and in the homes, we also deliver a packet of books for a first library and some other information about the importance of reading aloud, the effect of reading on brain development, and leading to future success. Networking with organizations such as Birth to Three, which is a Healthy Start contractee, and also the low-income clinic for Spanish-speaking families at Peace Health, we're able to identify families, and we do try to identify lower families from lower socioeconomic conditions to visit, and then the library's own marketing of the program also helps us identify families to be visited. The Ready to Read report that went in on the 2004 year had us able to report that we met our target goal of 200 families which received services. Then a small grant from the Eugene Public Library Foundation helped us supplement that target with 50 additional families. And in our application for 2005, we have set the goal with a combination of Ready to Read and foundation money to again reach 250 families with these services. The Read for Joy part of the program focuses on families who speak English. El Gozo de Leer focuses on families who speak Spanish. And of the 250 families, 70 were Spanish-speaking in 2004. And we've used these ready-to-read funds for the Read for Joy El Gozo de Leer program since 1997 and have served approximately 200 to 250 families each of those 8 years. I'd also like to talk briefly about two other programs, Storytime Express and Mother Goose Asks Why, which were previously funded with ready-to-read funds, and we now at the library continue those projects without the grant funding. So ready-to-read helps seed and allow the library to pilot these programs, and then with a combination of monies from our support groups, Friends of the Library, Eugene Public Library Foundation, and the library budget, we're able to continue these programs. Storytime Express visits family daycares and provides a story time to 8 family daycares once a month for an entire year. And through the role modeling of our Storytime presenter, as well as incentives of professional development materials and books for a library, a kids' library in the daycare center, we are helping develop some emergent literacy skills in preschoolers. Mother Goose asks why, and its Spanish counterpart, Abriendo la Puerta a los Libros, is a partnership project with a local Head Start. Our staff delivers 4 classes introducing parents to children's literature to use to teach everyday math and science lessons. And Ready to Read funds helped us purchase the materials from the Vermont Center for the Book, as well as for the Spanish-speaking part of it, actually develop our own manual, which other libraries now have access to. So Ready to Read funds did provide the seed money to allow us to do these important outreach and enrichment programs, which are benefiting the children in Eugene. So these have been Ready to Read state aid grants have been a motivating influence on the ability of Eugene Public Library to provide and meet needs in emergent literacy areas. And I would be communicating to you on behalf of the Eugene Public Library Board and my director, Connie Bennett, that we support the continuation of Ready to Read and the other services of the State Library, which help us and other public libraries in the state. So thank you for your past support, and thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
Please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I am Heather McNeil, Youth Services Manager at the Deschutes Public Libraries in Bend, Redmond, Sun River, Sisters, and Lapine. I'm here today in support of Bill 47, the State Library's budget, and specifically in support of the state's Ready to Read grants to public libraries. Thank you for this opportunity to speak. When I began my job as Youth Services Manager at the Deschutes Public Library 6 years ago, and I heard about this grant for the first time, I learned that it was a grant funded by the state legislature and administered by the state library. It was a grant that provided at that time 75 cents per child in the counties for the purpose of promoting reading, literature, and libraries. It is a grant that is intended solely to support libraries and their efforts to bring books and young children together. That's how it was described to me, and I thought I had died and gone to heaven. Now, 6 years later, I still think of this grant as a slice of heaven, and I thank you for your continuing support. I also want to tell you without a shadow of a doubt that this grant makes a very positive difference in the lives of children in Oregon. Some libraries, those who have very small budgets, use this as their book budget. If they don't have the Ready to Read grant, they don't have books, or at least they have less, perhaps none. Some libraries use the grant for special training so that their staff can inform parents and educators about the importance of early literacy and in the homes and in preschool environments. Some libraries use the grant to create special programs that entice young readers to the library, thus beginning their lifelong habit. But I would like to tell you today about how we use the Ready to Read grant at the Deschutes Public Libraries. Last year, we received approximately $21,000. The primary use of the money is to fund the annual summer reading program, which is designed to encourage children and their families to visit the library and read all summer long. Each child who reads or listens to at least 3 hours of books, and I do stress listens to because this is for children from birth through age 11, every child that does that for at least 3 hours receives a free book. And last year we gave away free books to at least 2,500 children. In addition, every week out of all those reading coupons, we have a prize drawing. And that child wins, and that's why we have show and tell up here today, wins a puppet. This summer, our reading program is fantasy-based, and so it's all about different fantasy creatures. If a child, its name is drawn, they win a puppet, and they also win the book that goes along with it. So the griffin comes with Harry Potter, and Pegasus comes with the mythological story of Pegasus. In addition to the prize drawings, we use the grants for our traveling mascot, which is hidden in different businesses, stores, and restaurants throughout Deschutes County all summer long. Each week, the family that finds it wins another free book. This summer, it will be this absolutely glorious book called Dragonology, which teaches you everything you need to know about dragons. We also use the grant to hire performers throughout the summer. And the reason for that is not only to entertain children and families, but to show them that the library is a fun, exciting, and creative place for them to be. And we want it to be a lifelong habit. So this year we will be bringing in a magician whose program centers around the fact that libraries are a place to go to learn anything, even magic. We will also be bringing in a children's theater group who will perform Sword in the Stone, introduce children to the Arthurian legend, and we will have an educational program about falconry that will star Orion, the golden eagle. But in addition to the summer reading program, we use the grant also for opportunities to promote library use through partnerships with other organizations in the community who work with children. For instance, we purchased the cardboard books that Healthy Start delivers to all of the firstborn children within the county, and that's approximately 300 children each year receive a cardboard book from us, as well as a library card application and information about our library programs. We used the grant to publish a brochure, which will be in your packet, called Together with Books. This brochure is put into books that are given away by the Central Oregon Pediatrics Association for every one of the well visits in their clinic. It reaches approximately 10,000 children, so each one of them receives information about our library when they get their book from the pediatricians. We used the grant to publish a bookmark called Teachers. It is a bookmark that we distribute to every teacher in the three school districts in Deschutes County to inform them about what the public library can do for them to assist them with the needs of their students. And finally, we use the grant to publish a list of bookmarks for parents called You Asked For It. And these are bookmarks that list books on particularly popular topics that parents need as they deal with issues in their home lives, such as we're moving, sibling rivalry, jealousy, bullies, starting school, toilet training. You name it, we've got it at the library. In other words, we use this grant to connect children, parents, and educators with books. We use the grants to present the library as a vital and essential part of each family's life all year long. We use the grant to bring literature into the hands and hearts of children, their parents, and the educators, and to show them that their public library and its resources are there for their entire life. Thank you very much for this opportunity to speak.
Representative Marsh.
Thank you. Do you find more teachers sending students to the library now that a lot of schools have had to cut back on library resources and services?
Yes, and also in Deschutes County, we're just about to kick off a program called Library Links, where we've taken applications from schools. We're going to be putting in our computers into their media locations. We are going to be couriering, is that a real word, our materials from our library to them and back. We're going to be providing ready reference training for their media managers because the libraries are being run by people who do not have any training. So, yes, we're making every effort to let them know that we are a resource to help them and provide what they don't have.
Thank you. I'm glad you're using that grant to also connect with the teachers. It's a valuable service. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Anything additional? Well, thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Coming.
Thank you.
Now, Mr. Shepke, could you come forward? And I'm going to actually close the public hearing and open a work session. But I'll have Ms. Monica Brown go through her recommendations from the Legislative Fiscal Office. I will close the public hearing on HB 5047, open a work session on HB 5047.
Mr. Chair and members of the subcommittee, before each of you, there should be a packet that is labeled work session recommendations. It's a memo from Legislative Fiscal Office. I will cover LFO's recommendations in summary unless there's a particular interest in going division by division. Essentially, LFO's recommendation makes five adjustments to the governor's recommended budget that was presented by Ms. Ames this morning. The first one is it reduces the assessment to state agencies by $375,000 for the 0507 biennium. It directs the agency to use non-assessment revenues to cover the... We're on this memo. I'm just summarizing these points. Okay. I outlined in the memo for you, Representative, isn't it? Directs the agency to use non-assessment revenues to cover the cost of talking book and braille rent that is not covered by general fund. Reduces $70,000 from the services and supplies budget from government research and electronic services division that is based on historical use over four biennia. It eliminates a quarter-time position in government research and electronic services. That position has been vacant for at least 3 years and is essentially what I would call a cleanup recommendation. It is the other quarter FTE of the position that is eliminated in Talking Book and Braille program that Ms. Ames mentioned earlier. And the last adjustment, it reduces expenditures to reflect lower PERS rates and attorney general rates that have been approved by other subcommittees. In total, the recommendation from LFO is just under 1% reduction from the governor's recommended budget.
Okay. Mr. Shepard.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the issue about TBAB's rent is a very difficult issue for us. We're currently having to subsidize the rent for the materials in Talking Book and Braille services with assessment funds, and we don't want to do that. We requested in our agency request to resolve that problem. That option package was not accepted by the governor, and Ms. Ames can speak to that. But if we're not funded for RAN and TBAPs, we would have to reduce the collection, and that would be a negative impact on our customers. So if I heard Ms. Brown correctly, her proposal is to reduce or is to not have us use assessment funds for RAN for the TBAPS collection. So we do have a concern about that, Mr. Chair. And perhaps Ms. Ames has a comment about that.
Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, Linda Ames with Budget and Management. For those of you that have been on this committee for a number of biennia, this issue has been ongoing for at least the three biennia that I've worked with this agency. At times, the governor has brought forward a package to fund this with the GF, and it hasn't passed here. This time, the governor didn't bring it forward, and it's still being discussed. And I think one of the issues here is that eventually technology is going to change the space needs for this collection, but we're not going to be there in this current biennium. I think then the agency is left with options of either using donation funding to cover that or reducing the collection. It's what, $57,000.
I think Ms. Brown should probably respond, but in her explanation to me, I think it is a pretty clear issue of if using administrative charges to state agencies, which are supposed to be based on state agencies' usage of state library resources, to use those charges for something that has nothing to do with their usage of those resources puts a lot of things into question, particularly if any of those resources are coming from lottery funds, or if they're coming from transportation-related dollars, or if they're coming from federal dollars that should have been designated for some other purpose. Now, they may be passed through three different agencies before they get to the state library, but if the federal dollars are there for, in a sense, for the cost of the services to that agency and they're being used for something entirely different, I think it raises a significant question. So.
And Mr. Chair, in response to that, Ms. Ames is correct that I think that this subsidy has occurred in the past. One issue that I don't believe has been addressed, and so I asked the question of legislative counsel, is there statutory authority that would even permit this type of subsidy to occur? I mean, not only is a cost allocation maybe not appropriate, but do you have authority to do it? And the guidance that I had from legislative counsel was there is not statutory authority to use the assessment for anything other than services to state agencies. And I don't believe, in making this recommendation, I don't believe that you can stretch the Talking Book and Braille program to assume that it serves state agencies.
Representative Wisnett.
Mr. Chair, as I guess the freshman member of this committee, I'm not sure that, you know, that's an advantage or disadvantage. I don't understand what you're talking about. Because I wasn't here the last few sessions, I'm not sure that's an adequate position for me to be in.
Well, I think it would be comparable to gas charging an agency for services being provided and then using the dollars for something totally different. Regardless of how worthwhile and you know, how good of a public purpose that use was, it isn't being used for the purposes that it was intended. Representative Marks.
I agree it shouldn't go through the charges to other agencies, but if this is a valuable program, we should pay for the rent out of general fund.
Okay.
Let's be honest here.
Mm-hmm. Can I be absolutely honest with the committee? I would like to get this budget through this building before we get into June and when budget situations might become a lot different. And we might not be looking at a 1% reduction in this agency. So that's about as honest as I can. That's about as honest as I can be.
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure if Representative Wisnett's question was answered, so maybe just a brief overview of funding sources would help clarification. This agency has several sources of funds. One, general fund supports a few of the programs, a portion of admin, a portion of the Talking Book and Braille program, library development. The second source is an assessment to state agencies. It's based on a portion of FTE and a portion on usage charges. It's the Government Research and Electronic Services Division within this budget. And so that money is recouped from agencies through the state government service charge. They also have other sources such as donation monies, some small charges for services, the Gates Foundation grant that was discussed this morning. So the issue that was before you in the Talking Book and Braille program, the Federal Library of Congress provides all of the materials and pays for the postage of the program to send out the books to the patrons. The state is then responsible for providing the facility as well as the distribution mechanism of those materials. What is being discussed here this morning is, at least for the last couple of biennia, the general fund dollars that had been provided as well as the available donation money has not covered the full cost of that program, and so a portion of the state agency assessment, that which is supposed to be dedicated to only services to state government, has been subsidizing that program. I think this time around it was roughly $57,000 to $58,000. The proposal is to leave the expenditure limitation with the agency and then direct them to use any other source of other fund revenue that they can come up with to cover that cost, but not use the assessment to state agencies to cover.
Thank you. Very nice.
Okay. At this point, I'd probably like to get a sense of the committee in terms of is the committee ready to proceed through the work session? I've already been honest, and my honest concern is that when we get into the latter part of this budget process, things might become a lot tighter, and I particularly don't think I'll have much chance, given one of the co-chairs' issues, going back and asking for even $50,000 or $60,000 more in general fund revenue. Okay,
about $8,600.
Well, what is the total?
If we didn't change the general fund amount, we're deleting it by $8,600. Looks like. Is that correct?
But Ms. Brown, what's the amount that would have to be subsidized, or that is being subsidized from the assessment?
Mr. Chair, the amount in the governor's budget was $57,855.
So,
token payment.
Mr. Chair, did the agency have any ending balance? Did they have an ending balance?
Mr. Shepke, do you want to respond? Do you have an ending balance? You have to have authority. You would have authority within this.
Mr. Chair, I'd have to consult with my business manager who's here today. May I bring
yes.
it up?
Yes.
Keith?
Can you respond to that? Senator Devlin, Representative Whitson. I'm not sure which fund source you're talking about.
The question is, would you have an ending fund balance if you had other funds authority that you could utilize to subsidize the rental cost that you could no longer use assessment dollars to subsidize?
We have an ending balance in our donation fund monies. And some miscellaneous receipts, a small amount. It's not the $57,000.
What's the donation balance that you have?
It's $600,000. Part of that is the endowment fund, which is non-expendable.
Okay.
So there's probably about $100,000.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, your name again, sir, for the record?
My name's Keith Adams. I'm the business manager.
Mr. Chair, if I could comment about the donation fund.
Yes.
This is a statutory fund that the statutes have placed under the control of the State Library Board. It's been our policy since we've had a donation fund for Talking Book and Braille services to not use it for the general operations of the program. And when we solicit funds, which we do twice a year, and we took in $167,000 last year, we tell our donors, who are mostly Talking Book and Braille Services patrons, that we do not use their donation funds to run the program. The purpose of the donations are to enhance the program, which we do, and also to build our endowment fund, which someday we intend to help run the program. We'll use the interest on the endowment fund, and in fact, we intend to do that in the 05-07 biennium. But I wanted you to know that about our donation fund.
Be at ease for a moment. If they don't do this, I don't know.
You haven't paid for it in the general fund. You're getting less.
That
Or
would be.
The general fund. And that's where we're squeezing.
I'm
not sure.
If our donors
their promotion of it.
Well, I'm caught in a difficult position here in the sense of maybe what we should do so we get as far as we possibly can, maybe we can get all the way to the end. Yes,
Mr. Chair, I $57,000 is a high mountain to climb given our resources here. But if we, at the bare minimum, did not accept the line 6 recommendation of reducing the general fund money by $85.90. That would be a small token towards that program, and then they would have a little, you know, it's general fund money towards the program, and then they'd have to figure out how to come up with the rest, and maybe in their next line of donations they could let people know that they're having trouble making the rent. Wouldn't use existing money that it's already been told they're not going to use it for the program operation.
Mr. Chair.
I guess I'd have a question for the agency. I appreciate their statement of what they've been doing, what's the history of these donations, and how they've solicited them. But are you implying to us that it would make your donations place your ability to raise money in some jeopardy if in the future, not past tense, but if in the future you simply said that when you sought these donations that these were, some of this might in fact be used for this purpose?
Mr. Chair, Representative Jensen, our board chair, Bill Sullivan, would like to answer that question, if he may. He's in charge of our donation fund.
Yes, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Bill Sullivan, the chair of the State Library Board. And as the board, the State Library Board, are the ones that decide what to do with those donation funds. It's a kind of a different category. This is charity money. Typically, these are old, blind people who leave money to us in their estate for a program that was a lifeline to them, that enabled them to keep their minds active even though they were blind and aged and all that. And it means a lot to them, and they give us the money to continue that program. I can't vote for using past money for rent. In the future, we could ask people to save the Braille program. There is a small but devoted crowd that really loves those old big Braille books, and they take up a huge amount of space. These are gigantic things. You know, you run your fingers across the dots. It takes up a lot of space, and that's why the rent is a problem. But I don't know that we could raise that kind of money, and I think we'd wind up having to probably reduce the Braille collection. I think that's where we'd be in the short run. I don't think we could raise that kind of money with a plea from the future.
Mr. Chair, if I can.
But some. We could probably raise some.
I'm understanding that we're talking about $50,000 plus or minus some change here. Mm. And I'm understanding that the last donation drive you had was $160,000. And you do these on an annual or basis, so we conceivably are looking at, again, $320,000 on a biennial type of thing. Out of that $320,000, if the people knew, and I'm not proposing, Mr. Chair, that we go back and ask you to go back on your word on what you had done in the past. I'm merely asking if doing this in the future would jeopardize your ability to raise money, and from what the board chair is telling me, if this were essential to program, probably wouldn't jeopardize the ability to raise money, because the people would still have that same commitment, and I realize where many of your donations, you know, might be coming from, but they'd still have that same commitment to the program. And if this were a need of the library, I'm hard-pressed to understand if it were in my case, that's probably the only way I can respond to it, unless you have other history, it wouldn't affect my donations in any way to the program. And so, I don't know exactly where we can get with this, but I do understand the chair's situation very well here, and I hear us asking for wanting some more money from general fund, and I'm sure we can come in, Mr. Chair, to every program, every agency that we have, and any one of us or any collection of us can make a plea in our work sessions for more money for that particular. And while out of a budget the size of the state of Oregon, $50,000 doesn't seem like a lot of money, but when you're down to a point of pinching pennies in a multi-billion dollar budget and you don't have enough to go around, it is a lot of money. And so, Mr. Chair, at least personally, am sympathetic with if they can do that and try to use that money to offset it, I'm sympathetic with your position of trying to move the bill.
Okay. What I'm going to do is I will accept a motion either to recommend approval of House Bill 5047 with the following amendments, which is the LFO amendments, or a motion to accept those amendments with the exception of line 6.
I would move the bill with the exception of line 6, which leaves the governor's recommended general fund as is. It makes a $8,580 general fund contribution towards the program, and with the intent that in the future folks are aware that the state did put some general fund money into this, that it wasn't appropriate that we funded it through other agencies, and that we're also asking them to and other folks to step up and as well. So that's
Ms. Ames, did you want to comment? I know that this comes from actually a reduction in the PERS rate from what was anticipated,
Mr. Chair,
general fund
members of the subcommittee, Linda Ames with BAM. I wasn't necessarily going to comment on this particular piece, but rather the difference that remains in the rent reduction. We could provide guidance in a budget report to say agency, work on donations, work on reducing your collection where it's appropriate, but you could have the opportunity to return to the emergency board if you got halfway through the biennium and it was clear that you weren't going to be able to resolve the issue.
I thought that was implicit in Representative March's motion.
Yes. Absolutely.
So that's on the record. Okay. There is a motion on the floor to approve the LFO recommendations with the exception of line 6 to direct them to look at their donations, look at also the possibility of gaining donations to cover this cost, and if they do experience problems to come back to the e-board. All those in favor of that recommendation, when their name is called, will signify by saying A. Those opposed, no.
Can you repeat the motion for Senator?
Oh, okay. Yes, I will repeat the motion. There is a motion to accept LFO recommendations with the exception of line 6 to direct the Department of the State Library to look at their donations, look at future donations also in terms of covering some of the cost of rental for the Talking Books Braille program, and should they experience problems meeting this cost, to come back to the e-board. Please call the roll. No.
Representative March?
Aye.
Representative Whitman?
Aye.
Senator Gordley?
Aye.
Senator Nelson?
Aye.
Senator Walker?
Aye.
Senator Whitson?
Aye.
Senator Yarmuth-Jurgens?
Aye.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I assume now that I've got some $8,900 worth of credit from some program that is near and dear to somebody's heart on the committee that I can call up for a program near and dear to mine.
Well, you won't have to listen to the co-chair. I will have to listen to the co-chair. Now we will move on with the recommendations, and we will move, first of all, maybe we'll go through briefly through the performance measures, and then we'll move the bill to the full committee.
Mr. Chair, I had one question during Mrs. McNeil's testimony. She talked about that Deschutes County gets $21,000 for the Ready to Read program. How does the state library distribute that money? So is everyone happy with what they're getting? In this?
Mr. Chair, Representative Wisnett, there's a statutory formula that allocates the money 75% on a population basis and 25% on a square mileage served by the library, and it's been that way since 1993.
Follow-up, Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
What population statistics are you using, sir?
We use the latest statistics from Portland State University.
Good. Thank you.
Okay. Please proceed through the performance measures.
Mr. Chair, in the work session packet that you have, the last two pages are the performance measures recommendations that are before you. There are several measures here. The agency had 19 measures. You're going to see the recommendation in bold, either in column 9 or in the case of an ad, you're going to see the narrative in column 3. The recommendation incorporates not only the agency's adjustments, they had proposed to delete some. They also reflect input from the co-chairs and the vice chairs. There are a good number of changes here. Essentially, the input that we received from the co-chairs were that while most of these were fine measures and very high outcome level measures, they didn't have a sense that they had a one-page summary of what was the direct impact that the state library was making on services. I mean, I think you've heard quite a bit of testimony this morning on Ready to Read. So just as an example, performance measures 9, 10, and 11, some input that was taken on that from the co-chairs was great to see that the circulation in children's programs was increasing in a fairly high number, but what impact did Ready to Read grants, which was the function of this particular agency as well as the Library Development Services, how much impact did they have versus the actions of local libraries on these numbers? So the overall guidance was to have the agency work with LFO and BAM and the Joint Legislative Audit Committee during the interim to develop measures that are specific to either outputs and outcomes of the library services themselves, and to have the agency keep many of these internally for their program development and management, and just summarize some more direct measures for the state agency. And I can go through them individually if you'd like, or if that was sufficient.
I think that was sufficient at this point. Any comment, Mr. Shepard?
Mr. Chair, I would comment that these are major changes to our performance measures as included in the governor's recommended budget, but that we'd be happy to work with the Joint Legislative Audit Committee and BAM on this in the next biennium, and we would hope to work something out to everyone's satisfaction.
Okay. Thank you. Now, in order is a motion to move House Bill 5047. Okay. A motion to adopt the performance measures is in order.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Senator Gordley has moved to adopt the performance measures. Is there anyone in opposition? Hearing none. Okay, a motion is in order now to move House Bill 5047 as amended to the full Joint Committee on Ways and Means with a do-pass recommendation.
So moved.
been moved by Representative March to move 5047 as amended to the full Joint Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. All in favor will signify by saying aye when their name is called. All opposed will say nay.
What? Can we get the opportunity to
comment
before we take this vote?
Yes, we do, Representative Jensen. Is there any discussion of the motion on the floor?
Thank you, Mr. I don't wish this to appear that I'm not supportive of this agency. I think they perform an extremely vital service for us. However, Mr. Chair, I am going to have to vote no on the motion. While I know the dollars are small that we're talking about here in terms of 8,900 rounded off to 9,000. I mean, it would be easy with it. $9,000 is a relatively very small item in the overall scheme of our budget. But as I've said before, the budget is tight. It's very, very tight. And I believe there are other ways that the agency would have been able to carry out this service without this, and I think we established something of a dangerous precedent when we begin the process of adding money to the recommendations that we have. It would generally be my preference that we could find places in the budgets that we're looking at to reduce the monies in order to deal with some of the very hard decisions that we'll have to make down the line. So with great regret, I am going to have to vote no on the budget here.
Any additional comments? Representative March.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I realize that it is a little dangerous path we're going along on general fund, but we have reduced the other funds significantly, and we are making the right decision in terms of correcting the way we're going in a direction of correcting the way that this program has been funded. It should never have been funded the way it was funded, and I think we're in correcting that. We're causing the agency to have a little bit of a heartache, and this goes a short way towards helping in that pain. But we are reducing the other funds' budget. So. Thank you.
Any additional comments?
Mr. Chair, briefly would like to thank the board chair for his service and hard work and all of those who testified today in helping us gain a greater understanding of how important and how effective these programs are. And again, we thank you for your service.
There is a motion on the floor to recommend to the full committee to, with the due pass recommendation, House Bill 5047. All in favor will signify by saying aye when their name is called, and those opposed, no.
Representative Jensen?
No.
Representative March?
Aye.
Representative Lissnett?
Aye.
Senator Nordley?
Aye.
Senator Nelson?
Aye.
Senator Walker?
Aye.
Senator Wittstein?
No.
Chair
Devlin? Aye. Motion passes. Senator Gourley, will you carry to the full?
Yes.
Representative March, Senator Gourley, will you carry to the full and to the Senate floor?
Yes.
And Representative March, will you carry to the House floor? Thank you very much for coming. The committee will be at ease for approximately till 10. So I'm going to be dangerous here and presume that people, if they leave, will be back by 20 to 10.
5 minutes.
Yesterday, I continued the hearing on SB 5529, so we will come back to SB 5529, the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission. The committee, we will finish the public hearing today, but we will not go into work session on the TSPC today. So at this point, I guess we're going to resume to wherever we left off in the presentation, and we have approximately about 38 minutes to finish.
Chair Devlin, members of the committee, for the record, Vicki Chamberlain, Executive Director of the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission. When we left the committee yesterday, we left at the place in the small vinyl notebook, the presentation document, where we were talking about our fee proposal. And that is on page 10 of 13 in that document. And we talked about it in sort of several pieces. And just to refresh your memory and to get us started, 55% of TSPC's licenses are permanent three-year licenses. That means that a teacher who teaches 30 years must renew the license 10 times. And about 40% of the licenses are five-year licenses. The other 5% are temporary licenses at various times. But the five-year licenses folks in 30 years obviously would renew only six times. And what's happened, we discovered, is obviously that the three-year licenses are contributing quite a bit more to the agency fund-wise. It costs exactly the same to renew a three-year license as it does a five-year license right now. The fee is $75 for renewal of a license, and that is good for 3 years or 5 years. That means that a three-year license then would be paying $25 a year for their license, essentially, and the five-year license would be paying about $15 a year for their license. Our fees are capped in our statutes. And the right now, we're charged, as I said, we're charging $75 for licensure. The most we could charge under our statutory caps is $100. And what we are requesting, we have a bill that's been referred to this committee, Senate Bill 49, is an increase in our caps. And we're going to present to you the cash flow analysis of why we believe we need to have this, but to essentially raise the fee to the current cap of $100 at the end of this biennium would leave us with an ending fund balance of about $168,000, which is approximately 1 month of reserves, operating reserves. So without a modification to our current law or without a change to the fees, we could make it through the next biennium. We could squeak through the next biennium. That would be barring any emergencies. With the requested cap increase, we are requesting to increase our fees from $75 to $110, which would net us a cash flow reserve at the end of, well, don't let me jump ahead. This document. This is no fee increase, this is fee increase, right? Okay. You were handed out these documents this morning, and they are behind, yes, good. The I want to work with the one that says in the upper right-hand corner, added $136,000 for increase in fingerprint fee. Yesterday, let me talk about that before I just dash on. Yesterday we talked briefly about the fact that the state police have increased their state police fee. In House Bill 2157, which is in the House right now, there is an amendment to amend TSPC's fees that will allow us to charge the cost that we have to charge for fingerprints. The $136,000 covers the exact cost of the fingerprints to the state police and to the FBI with the exact same overhead margin that we have right now, which is $6 per license. We didn't ask for any increase on that. So we added that in on the, we have to have that. The CSCC statutes say that licensees have to pay for the cost of the services they receive. And for at least the end of this biennium, for 3 months, we're going to have to pay for that fee increase out of our budget, and the licensees are not, because our statutory cap doesn't allow us to charge them more. All right, so looking at this, scenario one in the first two lines is the entire next biennium of cash flow.
That's so, yes.
If we have,
Jensen, Jensen.
Thank you. If we have statutory provisions that the fees have to cover the cost of the, if that is statutory provision. And then we've also capped the fees, so it's impossible for you to live up to the statutory provision. Wouldn't the more appropriate thing be to amend the statute to allow there to be an escalation of those fees in keeping with the provision that it has to pay for itself?
Chair Devlin, Representative Jensen, yes, that would be great. I do not know the reasoning behind why the fee caps were put in there. I know a lot of agencies have the proviso to charge the fees. We're required by law to come to you before we can increase the fee. But there's also the other restriction that we cannot charge more than we need to run the agency and the operation. So that would be great.
I don't happen to sit on an ed policy committee, but if I did, I would certainly be looking for a vehicle to institute that kind of an amendment
Chair Devlin, Representative Jensen, Senate Bill 49, which is in your committee now, which has our fees in it, would allow for that adjustment.
It allows for in the future?
Mm-hmm. If you chose to make the amendment.
If those amendments are adopted, it would allow you in 2011 or whatever to raise the fees if the FBI and the state police increase their fees?
Senator Devlin, Representative Jensen, let me be very precise. In the fingerprint bill, we took the cap out to allow us to do that if the state police did do that.
Thank you. And I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
Please proceed.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
Senate Bill 49 did come from the Senate Education and Workforce Policy Committee.
And for the record, Senate Bill, I haven't gotten a printout in the last 3 days, but Senate Bill 49 may have come to the Ways and Means Committee, but I don't think it has been referred to the subcommittee yet.
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
That's correct.
And as a consequence, it's not on my radar screen till as of this morning.
Yeah, there's a number of bills that my policy committee sent down here, and they're sort of in limbo. So hopefully we'll see them at some point.
We'll get back to your presentation, but I checked last, I think it was last Friday, and 8 pages, single space, the bills that have been referred to Ways and Means, and not one have been referred to the subcommittee yet.
Helpful to know. Back to the cash flow analysis. On the first scenario, the cash flow analysis is based on two assumptions. One, that we have no fee increase approved at all, that we would have, that we would leave the remaining, we would leave the fees at $75, and that we would run that out over the 2 years. Oh, the other assumption was that we would have reduced number of licenses. I'm sorry, I lost track of my thinking there. We've been projecting and noticing that we are actually renewing fewer licenses and issuing fewer newer new licenses. And the reduction has been somewhat nominal. We went from 20,000 down to about 18,500, and we're projecting to in 1 year. So we're projecting to lose another 2,000 to 3,000 new licenses over the next biennium. This seems to be fairly consistent with what appears to be going on in school districts. I know if you noticed in the headline yesterday of the paper that Portland Public Schools is planning to lay off teachers. When there are layoffs, fewer people tend to get their licenses even when they exit the programs. They sometimes look for other employment opportunities. So we made a cautious analysis on our revenue and projection. But with no fee increase and the expected cash flow and with the increase in the state police, as you would see, we would be having less revenue every month than we need throughout the entire biennium, resulting in a net nearly $1 million deficit. Oh, excuse me. Thank you. I'm sitting here with my numbers people who are pointing this out to me. We would the first biennium is the first line, not the first two lines, as I did this. And at the end of the biennium, we'd have 90,000. At the end of the next biennium, no fee increase, we would have a $1 million deficit, as I'm planning ahead. I probably ought to let one of these two do it. Scenario two is would be using the current statutory limit of the $100 without an amendment to the bill that isn't here yet. With a fee increase up to the cap and allowing us still to issue our 3-year licenses out to 5 years, we could make it through the first biennium. If you'll look at the 2007-09 without a increase to our caps, that is when we would suffer a deficit, because that would be when we would be experiencing even fewer licenses coming in as the 3 years rotate into a 5-year cycle. If you flip it onto the back page, and the back page projection is if the bill did come to your committee and we did get amendments that would allow us to charge $110, which is what all we believe we need to cover the cost, $10 over the cap, this is what we would find. At the end of this biennium, we would have a substantial ending fund balance of $1.3 million, but we would count on that balance to get us through the 2007-2009 biennium to have us end up with a $561,000 balance that's projecting business as usual over the next two biennia, which leaves us about a 3.2-month ending fund reserve. So we've tried to run the cash out and the numbers out so you could see what would happen under every scenario.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mrs. Chamberlain, you know, if we continue to have declining teachers or number of teachers, you know, you may really be in problem if you're going to the 5 years. That's why, you know, maybe 3 years licensing so you can, because if you do a 5-year, you can't go back and add to them if the price goes up, is that correct? And you think this is going to create, you know, the way your ending balance is going down, because we're only, how many years are we just talking? 4 years, and your license is for 5 years. So it's, you know, I'm sure you considered that when you made the decision to go to 3 to 5 years, but it could be an adverse effect your situation.
Chair Devlin and Representative Wisnant, the last 30 years has allowed us to trend out cycles fairly well, and when we've had drops in licensure, it just tends to not last more than 3 to 5 years, and then it tends to go back up. The other issue that's interesting about that is we have 60,000 active licenses out there, and only 36,000 of them are employed in the public schools. So people who don't have jobs in the schools are keeping their licenses active. I did ask the universities to project their enrollment and if they had concerns about enrollment in the education programs, and they're all expecting fairly flat enrollment, which is good. A couple of them are expecting to have increased enrollment. So we're counting on the employment situation encouraging some people to leave the profession, which would account for part of our attrition, and possibly a slowdown in people coming in from out of state. We did project actually issuing fewer licenses this time around, and that actually did happen. So it seems to be prudent to continue to do it at least one more biennia. So it isn't a precipitous drop-off enough that I'm genuinely concerned, but we do watch our statistics month to month. We would be here if we were frightened.
Please proceed.
Thank you. So are there any questions about our proposed fee increase and the situation that we're in?
Yes. I have some questions. My problem is I don't know that I'm smart enough to ask them. So as we proceed through the budget, I may get more informed about issues and things, and I would just like to reserve asking or trying to ask some questions here until we get further down the road.
Representative Jensen, one thing for the record, too, is that we ultimately probably will have the fee increase bill before the committee, and we'll have a pretty extensive discussion of that issue at that time. I think the judgment we're going to have to make is we're not sending out the TSPC budget today, but whether or not we will wait for the fee increase bill before we send it out is probably a question that's going to have to be answered. We will have, sooner or later, we will get the fee increase bill. I don't think the co-chairs will hold that up, and we will have a pretty extensive discussion.
All right, thank you.
Chair Devlin and committee, just as a wrap-up comment, I made a comment yesterday, and I'd like to conclude this area with that. We going to a five-year license would smooth out the workload in our office significantly and allow us not to have to project for future staff. And that is really another reason behind the proposal to have fewer licenses come in more frequently. And that is that's planning ahead to not have future staff. All right, I'll move into our policy packages.
Before we leave, I do have one question. Did I look at, in some of the testimony there that you have, some of the material you have here, that you have a distinction between out-of-state and in-state fee application, new license?
Yes.
And I guess I fundamentally have some problem with that. Problem with it on the basis that our license is only good to teach in the state of Oregon. And if they're coming, wherever they're coming from, if they're coming into the state of Oregon, they're going to be on kind of a par to, and...
Yeah, let me address that.
Please, if you could.
Senator Devlin, Representative Jensen, I understand that concern completely. I had it as well as I was learning about the operations of the agency. It's a one-time fee when they come in from out of state. It's not, you're permanently out of state, you permanently have to pay high fee. The situation is that since we do approve Oregon programs, we know the curriculum and the structure of those programs, and so an in-state license does not require the same review. An out-of-state license, when they come in and they want to add an endorsement, we do check their transcripts against our course requirements, special ed, math, and it would not be unusual for someone to have to pick up additional work if their state, for example, didn't require a major or the same type of background we believe they need to have for the endorsement. That type of evaluation takes significantly more time. The evaluators have to comb the transcripts, have to determine whether they're equivalent to our courses and make those determinations. So on the initial entry into our office, those applications are more time consuming. So it's a reflection of recovering the costs for the service provided.
Mr. Chair, just in comment to that, I appreciate and understand if that's what you're doing, and certainly can support it. I was led somehow to believe in the last time that we last session or last meeting that we had that we had some reciprocity sorts of agreements with all of these other places that were, where other states were credentialing their schools so that we were happy with them. And what I hear you're saying now, that at least there's some limits to that reciprocity sort of thing. Thank you.
You're welcome. Policy pack, all right, we have three policy packages. Our biggest challenge in this agency has been probably for even way before I was hired, public service. And we have invested quite a bit in technology to improve our ability to serve people. When we came last session, we asked for one more public service representative. We, our public service representatives answer the phone and answer email. We have approved three permanent public service representatives, and you gave us permission to have one limited duration public service representative. We showed a significant improvement in our ability to answer phone calls and email much more quickly with one more person on staff. And the data shows, as I pointed out yesterday in an earlier part of the presentation, that we have gone from an average of a week turnaround to 2 to 3 day turnaround on our phone and email. The extra staff also allows us during the summertime to not have to rely on temporary employees for overload and work. And so we, of all our requests, feel that we very much need approval for a permanent duration on this position. The next paragraph here on page 11 that we're seeking is a 0.5. We had you approved us a 0.5 limited duration to work in what we call the front end of the office. This is the, we have a person who full-time opens the mail, and then this person and our 0.5 limited duration person does data entry and scanning. They're the people who create our electronic files. Over the last 2 years, we have been able to go entirely to electronic files from paper files, which has improved workflow in the office tremendously. Now when someone calls, even I can get on the computer and open that person's file. I can see their application, I can see their transcripts, and I can see any correspondence they've submitted. I can see the contacts our office has had, a record of the phone calls, a record of the email. It takes human labor to scan the paperwork into those files. We are backed up with a half-time FTE in this position in terms of staying abreast of the paperwork that comes in and converting it to electronic files. So converting this position to a 1.0 FTE would allow us to stay caught up. We barely stay caught up in the slow times of our year, and in the summertime, we sometimes can be a week and a half behind in having information scanned or connected to the file, which then continues to slow down our service when people want it the most. The next request that we are making is a office specialist 2 position, 1 FTE. This position would, we've been able now with the electronic to assess the workload. This would support, we added a half-time investigator, but we did not add any support staff. We have, this person would serve the half-time investigator in addition to backing up the executive assistant who oversees discipline and all the commission work. This person also, we've been able to hire on a temporary basis for the last couple of months, has done the commission minutes and backs up the coordinator of program approval who does the site review visits that we were telling you about. We did an analysis of the overtime we were having to pay staff to become prepared for commission meetings and other activities in the office and determined that we could pay for a position with the overtime we were paying. Additionally, this also allows us not to rely on extra help in the summertime. And then the final proposal in this package is to reclassify our office manager position from a support supervisor 2 to a principal executive manager B. This I believe this position has been working pretty much out of class for the most part in terms of how the position is classified. It has a tremendous amount of responsibility, including oversight of our IT services. We have a relationship with the Department of Administrative Services that is symbiotic, I guess you would have to say. We are very, very dependent on the quality of their service. If they break down, we break down. And then we have to have somebody full-time be able to track that back and forwards. This position also does HR, does the payroll, does the contracting, does the purchasing, supervises the intake of the money, supervises the scanning operation and the front-end mail load, and then also supervises the mailing out of the licenses, and also supervises our online services to districts and universities. It's just a significant position. So we believe that we can improve our public service even more. I think we've had a sea change in public opinion about the service our office is providing. It's not perfect. I set up a connection on our internet that allows people to access my desk directly if they have complaints, and I learned I had to do that because when we were getting complaints, I wasn't hearing about them, and that has been a great vehicle for me to find out when we aren't doing a very good job, and it also lets me know how people are feeling about if the phones aren't working or if they think it's taking too long for email to come back or if they're thinking it's taking too long for files. So that has been really helpful. That's our first package, Madam Chair.
Questions or comments? Senator Walker.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Chamberlain, I think that's a very novel approach. You're not passing the buck. And I would just like to ask you, do you find that your complaint list is long or getting shorter as a
it's
result?
It's pretty
of that?
Consistent, Madam Chair, Senator Walker. It is, it's about 3 to 5 a week. Some weeks I don't get any. In the summertime, it tends to go up a little bit when the volume goes up. I respond to them personally. Occasionally I'll ask someone else in the office to respond. Some people have discovered it's they'll send an email to the general email and then they'll send one to me and it's really just a question. It's not a concern or a complaint about the agency, but that's rare. But it happens. But it has been very enlightening for me to clean up some of our procedures.
Ms. Chamberlain, I would commend you for your efforts. However, I have received complaints, communications from parents, from the teacher, from administrators, and from actually a member of the commission, all still being very highly concerned about access from the telephone to the agency. And I understand you're moving in that direction, and I would encourage you to continue that effort. And I share with Senator Walker the admiration for your answering your own complaints. Appreciate that.
Chair Gordley, Senator Whitsett, our phones are a bane in the agency. They're antiquated. We only have 6 incoming lines. And they clearly cannot handle the volume. We had intentionally decided to wait till the next biennium to make a proposal to replace them. Our estimates we've had are been from 30,000 to 150,000, so which is, as you can see, a pretty large range. Could spend this biennium truly investigating a good system. There's also some question about who owns the phones, whether the agency owns them or the Department of Administrative Services owns them. And as they improve their IT communications and what they want there, that'll help also. But I'm embarrassed by what we can deliver by on our phones, and I apologize to people repeatedly for that. So it is our hope to bring a proposal to you next session for a new phone system.
Please continue.
Policy package 2 is a a package proposal that includes a reduction proposal from our gas analyst, which is appropriate given information we had from the Smart Buy program. We need to replace our CPUs. We only have 21 positions in the office, and as I was explaining to you, to maintain these electronic files and the accuracy and consistency on them, we need to have operating equipment that's very good. The package would replace our server, which holds our data, and you can imagine with 60,000 active licenses and all the inactive licenses data we have in there, that is crucial to us. So, I don't have the numbers on that, but they're in the budget book. I can come back to those. And then the total for that package is $28,000. Just quickly wrapping up on the third policy package, that is the fee increase, which we've covered in great detail, I think, before this. And the outcome, again, would be to smooth out the service and improve it. I just want to make sure that you're aware of what the costs are on these packages. And in our notebook on page 15, worksheets, and I apologize for not having this more. Page 51?
Is that 51?
Page 51, Larry says. Here we are. Well, this is the S revenue. So policy package one would require a limitation increase of $235,408. Policy package two required an increase of $28,000.
Ms. Chamberlain, yes. If you'd stop for a moment, I'm not sure we're looking at the same place that you're looking. Page 51 is an Orbitz budget narrative.
Okay, flip the page to page 52.
That's just the pure
financial. Okay. And if you, on the very, very top of page 53 is the sum total of the four proposals we had. That was, in summary, the making the public limited duration public service rep position permanent for a total of $78,528 for the biennium, making the half-time limited duration office special one a one-time permanent position for a total of $71,488 for the biennium. This is on 52. To reclass the office manager's position would be a total of $2,049 for the biennium, and then to add the requested office specialist support position would be a total of $78,793. That comes to a sum total for the policy one package of $235,408.
Questions or comments? Yes, Senator Woodson.
I would wonder if rather than adding staff and increasing wages, you might be better serviced by replacing your telephone system for $3,000. And I understand that you have a symbiotic relationship with staff that may not allow you to do that. But I think that would be a good place to focus on improving the service.
Senator Gordley, Chair Whitsett, I think those are notable comments. I just don't know, truthfully, if the phone service increase would be the same net benefit of the increase of the positions. I would have to think about that. I can't come to that conclusion on my feet, but I will think about that for you.
I would just say that I support Senator Woodson in asking you to look at that piece.
The technology package, then, as we mentioned, 15 new CPUs and a new server. Our budget reflects on page 57 that the total for that package would be $28,500, but our DAS analyst has recommended a reduction of nearly $4,900 as a result of savings we believe we can achieve through the Smart Buy program. And then finally, the third package, the fee increase we talked about would, we could only request under the current caps. We could not assume a fee increase on a bill that hadn't been approved yet. So to do the scenario that would allow us to do the fee increase under our current caps would net us $876,000 in revenue. And that just gives you a number that's consistent with the analysis we gave you of the cash flow.
Other comments or questions? Additional information.
Yes, thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, we were asked yesterday to talk about legislation that affects our agency. That is there out there. I brought major legislation. I gave the analysts a memo that looks like this, delivered to you this morning, to you from me. We introduced seven bills this session. They have all successfully made it through the Senate and reside in the House now. All but Senate Bill 49 have been referred to the House Education Committee. They are generally procedural requirements. I don't know if you want me to discuss them or not. They're noted there. Other legislation of note that would affect our agency is Senate Bill 703, which would allow us, on limited circumstances, to license persons who've been convicted of prostitution who we have not been able to license before. House Bill 2065 would allow our educators to supervise speech-language pathologist assistants who are licensed in another agency. That's been a point of confusion in the schools, and the speech-language pathologist proposed a solution. We're very delighted with it. House Bill 2157 contains the fingerprint fees and the fingerprint procedural changes. And then House Bill 3172 was introduced in the House to abolish our agency. We had a hearing on that Monday. I don't know if any additional hearings or work sessions are going to be scheduled on that bill. And then finally, Madam Chair, in response to one of your questions yesterday, I brought you examples of four sets of competencies that we have passed recently in areas in early childhood, physical education, math, and administrators. And what I did quickly, I brought you it should be a package of four documents that look like this. What I did in each of them is I highlighted the language that represents what the commission has done with regard to differentiating instruction and for different learners. So on the early childhood competencies, for example, if you go to the next to the last page, we say that educators, in order to build meaningful curriculum, early childhood educators, a candidate will know and use differentiated instructional strategies to promote equitable learning opportunities and success for all students, regardless of native language, socioeconomic background, ethnicity, gender, disability, and other individual characteristics. This is the language we are putting into our competencies. It is also, I will note to you, language that is now specific to Oregon language. These are national standards that we've adopted, and this is language that we have added. And, Madam Chair, that concludes the information we have for the committee.
Which language, again, specifically is the national standard?
Anything that isn't not in bold,
not in bold,
is the national standards.
Right. Questions or comments? Representative Wesnick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So where are we now in the presentation? I have questions not directed towards the policies, but other questions. Are we going to go over what's our plan?
Madam Chair and Representative Wisnett, I believe the agency has completed its presentation. There was one additional piece of information that was provided, and that has to do with the agency leasing the facility mm-hmm. they are in now versus a DAS-owned facility, and that's been provided for you if you wanted to go over that. We really didn't spend a lot of time yesterday on performance measures other than the agency covering those that they would like to either delete or modify. And as you know, when we come back into work session, you will have a report in front of you that you will need to adopt. So we could try to briefly go over the remaining performance measures, see if you have any questions or requests for additional information on those, or if you like, you could just do that on your own and send me questions, which I can forward on to the agency so that when you come back for a work session, you're ready to take action on those. There's really not a lot of time left right now to go over the performance mm-hmm. measures in depth, so I would welcome
I'm hearing you. Representative Wisnett say that he has some remaining
right.
questions, so perhaps
right.
we should deal with those.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wasn't here, and I understand you're in a contract arrangement now, but that was not a good, from what you presented to us, does not appear to be a good financial decision to lease that building for 10 years when the state has the facility open. I'll talk offline to DAS about it. I don't know what we can do at this point, but I don't think that I know for a fact that there's space available in government-owned facilities that we're paying that much money for a commercial building. Does not seem right. Madam Chair, also I would like to ask Mrs. Chamberlain, I did this with when the Department of Education testified. I am not seeing the state of Oregon do anything really aggressively about troops to classrooms or troops to teachers, I think it's called. And I would think that this organization should also be involved in that, especially with all of our young men and women that are serving in the military are coming back now. And that's a program that Oregon has not produced one teacher from that program yet. And I would like Mrs. Chamberlain to maybe see if she's familiar with that and how she could interface with the Department of Education and our community and see if we can use that program to help fill some of these teacher needs.
Madam Chair, Representative Wisnant, Oregon's been involved in troops of teachers at two different times. We were involved in the early 90s. And I did do some investigating into this when the Department of Education applied for a grant to just as I came on board nearly 3 years ago. And the persons who were recruited into the Troops to Teachers programs, only two people in the state completed out of 20 that were funded in a grant. And it was a partnership with Western Oregon University. They were extremely discouraged. Apparently, people come out of the service excited about teaching. Some of them never made it from exit of the service to entry into the program after they had applied. The Department of Education, I know, and when ESEA was approved, the Education Secondary Education Act, the new No Child Left Behind Act, they gave grant monies from Troops of Teachers, which I know the Department of Education acquired. We did meet with them to explain how we could license people who are interested in this program immediately for entry into the classroom. So we have worked with them. That's the best that we can do. We don't serve any recruitment in our office. We just merely license. Recruitment comes from the universities or the employers.
follow up, Madam Chair? Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Chairman, you said you worked with them, ODE, or and okay. And I would ask that. Thank you for what that report. But I'd also ask you to work with the Oregon National Guard to see if you can work. You know, be sure that they, those people know about your organization. You know, the possibility instead of ODE. They have a lot of staff and people that can maybe help you and see if we can utilize this resource.
Chair Gordley, Representative Wisnat, I can contact Colonel Caldwell and let him know what we are aware of.
Thank you.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Ms. McGlashan reminded me, I did provide one other document for you, and I took our performance measures and took out the ones that we're requesting would be deleted, so you could see what we would have left if the modifications we've requested were adopted. And I think it gives you a much clearer version of what would be guiding our agency if the recommendations that have been approved by the progress report of board would be approved by you as well. So it's sometimes really hard to look at these things and go add this, take out this, which one really counts. And so we would be remaining right now. Currently we have 13 performance measures. This would leave us with 9. I noted on number 7 that we, like all agencies, are required to adopt a new customer satisfaction measure. We're going to receive guidelines from DAS on how to do that, and as soon as we do, we will adopt it and start measuring it. So this was brought for your information.
Mr. Chair, as we make this transition back to you, Ms. McGlashan has pointed out that we have not spent a great deal of time on the performance measures, other than the performance measures the agency would delete. And so it is Ms. McGlashan's suggestion that members individually may want to meet with the agency to get further explanation, clarification. And then I would add that when we get to the point of work session, obviously we would want to spend some thoughtful time with each of the measures.
I think that would be a worthwhile suggestion. I think also if I can get the other bill to the committee in some reasonable period of time, not early July, then that would be a time when we could do both of these things simultaneously, the fee bill, at least make a judgment on the fee bill and discuss these items and maybe have some more time for the agency at that time also. Right now, I think we are pretty booked up for the next 2 to 3 weeks, and then after that, everything is just up to the co-chairs and the leadership as far as where we go from there. So, Representative March.
Thank you. Mr. Chamberlain, I noticed one, the move that occurred in 2001 was not your initiation. It was forced upon you, and the difference between a DAS facility and a private lease is not huge over the 10-year the remaining period of this three biennium. But I do notice your move cost $38,000.
It funds a library.
however, the moving costs, of course, more than offset that. Now, I don't see in your moving costs printing costs, time loss, things like that, because I was in an agency with the county, then we had 3 moves forced upon us, and each time we had to reprint, have time or a template to have a change of address. We had to change the phone address, etc. And when you're moving a bunch of files and things, it takes a lot of time, and you're losing a lot of valuable staff time in that. I don't see any kind of estimate for those kinds of costs that are sort of incidental to moving. So were those just absorbed by you in the last go around, basically? So,
Chair Devlin and Representative March, you did make me also think of one other thing, and that is that TSPC has had about, I think, five locations since I was first licensed in 1980. And one day when our staff was out ill and I was sitting at the front desk, a woman came in and she was furious because she couldn't find us. The phone book still had us listed in the public service building, and it was like 2.5 years after we had moved them. And teachers really want us to stay put, and I'm not, you know, lobbying in any direction. We, and the other thing, I did read this yesterday when Larry did this. As a small agency and responsible to DAS, they negotiated the lease. We didn't have any say in that. They determined the location. We had very little say in that. And we go where we're told and do, you know, and do pretty much what we're asked to do. So.
And they charge you for that.
That was, yes, they do. Yes, they do.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, with that, we will close this hearing tomorrow, and we'll bring you back hopefully sometime the next month. And I'm an optimist today. We'll close the hearing. And tomorrow morning we will be back for a public hearing on the Oregon University system, which will be probably very well attended.
The overflow rooms, Mr. Chair,
yes.
I'm sure.
See you in the morning.
Thank you.